You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom. When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom.
Today on The Grave Talks, a conversation with Jim Harold. Jim Harold has been a name synonymous with the paranormal and podcast world for more than a decade. As one of the first paranormal podcasters in the world, Jim has heard from some of the most fascinating people in the world of the unknown, hosting thousands of episodes of Jim Harold's Campfire and the Paranormal Podcast. Today, we discuss what life is like and some fascinating stories with a fellow broadcaster of the paranormal.
Well, I think it goes back to me. I'm kind of in that 50-year-old mark, and I was a little kid when Leonard Nimoy had In Search Of. And thank you for having me on the show, by the way.
Sure.
It's a real pleasure. And the thing is that I watched that show, and it kind of instilled in me this thought that, you know, there's something else. There's something beyond. There's something that we don't understand. Now, watching that show at the end, I always get frustrated because they never had an answer. You know, I always wanted an answer. And I have to say, maybe that frustration has continued to this day because as many different interviews and people I've talked to, I don't think I have the answers. But definitely would go back to my elementary school days and Leonard Nimoy and In Search Of was just fascinated by that show and still kind of informs my thinking in the sense that, you know, some people are ghost people. Some people are UFO people. Some people are cryptid people. I'm kind of all of it. I'm interested in all this stuff.
What were specifically some of the cases or some of the things that you saw on the Leonard Nimoy show that really fascinated you, that you almost kind of go back to today when you think back to those years?
Well, you think about, and some of these are not quite paranormal. Some of them have, other shades of life, like the Jack the Ripper one they did. Amelia Earhart, mysterious disappearances. That's fascinating. And of course, Bigfoot. I was always fascinated by that 1967 film by Roger Patterson and Bob Gimlin. Always fascinated by that. That's always one, that famous shot, the shot of the Sasquatch or the Bigfoot walking, supposedly. That one always fascinated me. And then probably my greatest fascination in the paranormal, and they covered it on various programs, is the idea of the afterlife. The thing about all these things we talk about, you might not see a UFO. You might not see a Bigfoot. Heck, you might not even see a ghost. But I hate to say it, but everybody listening to the sound of my voice right now, you're going to die. It might be 80 years from now. It might be 90 years from now. If there's life extension, it might be 100 years from now. But eventually you die. And I think we all kind of wonder, well, what's next? And the shows that they did that focused on that were maybe the most fascinating. And of course, one we don't hear much of today, the Bermuda Triangle and all the strangeness that went on down there. Love that stuff.
Yeah, that's definitely an area that fascinates me too. When I was a kid, I remember I went on a cruise and unbeknownst to me, all of a sudden my mother's like, and they said we're in the Bermuda Triangle today. And I'm like, yes. And I'm sure other people are like, oh God. And I'm like, maybe something will happen.
maybe we'll disappear and find out where, what was that flight 49? I can't remember the name of the flight. Flight 49, I think it was. The squadron, World War II era pilots, and they went missing and all the strange radio communications and so forth. So that's always been one. And then that creepy music they had on it. In Search of. It still plays in my mind. They just knew how to make it spooky.
Yeah. I think you can look back on some of those old programs and there's a certain element of it, no matter how technically advanced television can be. There's just an element to some of those older programs that can't be replicated. For me, it's Unsolved Mysteries. For me, there's nothing creepier than the intro music to Unsolved Mysteries and Robert Stack giving his intro and reading the title cards. And that's just, it's perfect.
I mean, I went from In Search of to Unsolved Mysteries. Yeah. I was a little, that show, I went right from In Search of to Unsolved Mysteries. I absolutely love that program. And you're right, again, that creepy music, and Robert Stack was the best host for that. Nobody, and that's the thing about some of these things, nobody else can do it. And what I loved about them, same thing, they covered a wide range of topics. You'd have true crime, which kind of, it's like a Venn diagram, it kind of a little overlap, because there's also, is there something supernatural and evil going on with serial killers and just all of the different things. Now, what I read about that show is that the producers and the people involved with it, I can't speak for all of them, but in general, they were personally very skeptical of the paranormal stuff. Mm-hmm. But it did so well, they said, we got to do this. We've got to make this a part of what we do. And they did it so well. And again, another one of those classic series that cannot be replicated. I know they've tried. They tried with In Search Of. To me, you can't replicate that. It was a thing that was perfect for its time and place.
Yeah, you're exactly. And another interesting fact about that show that I don't know that a lot of people realize is when they went out and they did the reenactments of the cases on Unsolved Mysteries, they would just find local actors, like from the local high schools and local playhouses, to do the scenes. And it's kind of amazing because some of them were a little hokey, but some were pretty good. And these are folks that I'm sure just still live in these communities. And if you went to that town, you go, oh my God, you were the person on Unsolved Mysteries. At least I would be the one cornering someone at the 7-Eleven going, you were the one on the bunk bed episode.
That's right. And that was really smart producing that keeps costs down. When you do a show like that, you got to think about that. How you do that. How can you get a story across and do it economically?
Yeah.
because they were doing so many reenactments. It's a great show. And Robert Stack, oh my gosh, yeah, with the trench coat and the fog and the whole thing. Cool thing was they actually solved some mysteries.
Yeah, they always had the phone number at the end, and then they would show the call center. And you wonder, did that call center really exist like that? Were people sitting there at the Unsolved Mysteries call center waiting for the phone calls to come in? You have to wonder. But they did. They did have those updates. And then there's, you know, we figured out who did what.
Operators are standing by to see if you can answer this unsolved mystery.
Yeah. It'd be interesting today to dig back into some of those stories and see if any of them have been solved. I'm sure some have, especially the murder ones. I was actually just speaking with someone the other day. One of the most fascinating stories to me on Unsolved Mysteries in the paranormal realm was the haunted bunk bed in Horicon, Wisconsin. And I grew up about 30 minutes from that area, so that's why it really stood out to me. And do you recall that story at all?
I do not.
This is a story where a family gets a bunk bed for their kids, and then immediately after getting it, they start having all of this activity in their home. The husband comes home from work one night and sees it looks like his garage is on fire. He runs into the house to try and alert his family, gets in there, his lunchbox goes flying across the room with just no one threw it. It just went flying across the room. He runs out. His family runs out. Garage is not on fire. There's nothing going on. Then the kids start seeing things and hearing things in their room right by the bunk beds. And uncle decides to try and calm the kids down. And as creepy as this kind of sounds, the uncle stays the night in the kids' bedroom, and creepy in a whole other way. But he was just trying to calm the kids down, just like, I'll sleep on the sleeping bag over here. And something absolutely terrified him that he would not speak of. But all they could narrow it down to was the fact that the one changing factor in their life was these bunk beds that they brought into their home.
You know.
So they decided, okay, let's get rid of the bunk beds. What else could it be? Get rid of the bunk beds. Nothing ever happens again. So that to me has always been a very fascinating story on Unsolved Mysteries. And I never in my life thought I would ever have some sort of reconnection to this story, other than it just being one of those, you know, hooks for me as a child that really got me into the paranormal. But I discovered by doing my show over the years on Real Ghost Stories Online, where people write and call their stories in, a reoccurring theme, and I'd be very curious to know if you ever hear this, of bunk beds being involved in paranormal situations. I don't know why, but for the life of me, we have gotten probably hundreds, if not close to 1,000 stories over the course of the years, where a bunk bed is a contributing factor or one of the weird players in paranormal activity picking up in someone's home. So much so that on our show, we've created this kind of joke about it. We have a bell that we ring. We call it a bunk bed bell. And for years, I would give them out to as premium giveaways to premium subscribers or our EPPs as a thank you for their support. And then they could ring the bell along at home whenever the word bunk bed came up, because it came up so frequently. And it was so bizarre. And I don't know what that is or why that is, but I've been trying to figure this one out for years. Have you seen anything in terms of a trend of bunk beds, or is that just on my head?
Well, it's funny you should mention that. No, not on bunk beds specifically, but there's certainly been a trend of haunted furniture. But let me say something about bunk beds, and I'm just thinking out loud here. Now, we've done a lot of shows on the Paranormal Podcast and Jim Harold's Campfire where the topic of poltergeist has come up. And I had interviewed years ago a guy by the name of Michael Clarkson. He's a Canadian journalist who was actually nominated for a Pulitzer Prize, and he was a crime reporter. So this was kind of like a just the facts, ma'am, kind of guy. And he did something on poltergeist, did a book. And he came to the conclusion there was really something to it. And in many cases, it has to do with young people and adolescents. And those young people, there's an energy about them or something that, and we know in a lot of the famous cases, there were teenagers in the house. And there's something that seems to happen with something like poltergeist that kind of takes advantage of that that reservoir, that great energy that adolescents have and taps into it and causes weird things to happen. Now, taking that a step further, if you think about bunk beds, you know, maybe that's a little old for bunk beds, but you're dealing with young people with all of this energy and so forth. So, and this is just a thought experiment, could the explanation be, Tony, in these cases, when you're looking at bunk beds being haunted, are they haunted not because of the beds themselves, but the people who inhabit them, who are young, they're boisterous, they've got a lot of energy going on at that time in life, and maybe it's something tapping onto that. Have you thought about that?
Yeah, that's an interesting one that I've always been intrigued by, and I'd love to hear some of your thoughts on that, because is it something where it's just energy run amok because there's so much of it in that adolescent age, or is it when we talk about that, is there something else harnessing onto it, using it as a battery, like another conscious entity that is using it to manipulate.
I would lean towards the latter.
I think
maybe something saying, aha, here's a reservoir of power. I can feed off of this. That's what I'm thinking. I think that may be the case. I did want to mention a couple of haunted furniture things.
Yeah.
We had one in the early days of Jim Harold's campfire that was a woman who said she had a haunted recliner. And all of these weird things, shadow people and all of these different things would happen. And they finally took the recliner out to the lawn that we here in Ohio, we called a tree lawn. I think other people have other terms for it across the country and the world, but we call it a tree lawn for the garbage. And the person said they looked out the window and they claimed that they could see spirits flying out of it. And that the chair started dragging itself down the street. So that was a very haunted recliner. And they had gotten the recliner secondhand. They had bought it from someone whose loved one died, and that was their chair. And they felt that it was haunted. Another case like that is we had a gentleman, and this was not that long ago, maybe a year ago or so. He was at an estate sale in Los Angeles. And after some back and forth, he ended up a couple of days later going back and buying some items. And the person said, I really like you. I'm going to throw in a few things. And they threw in this old antique mirror. And one day he's at home, and the mirror, I think, is in the same room as he is. And he's sleeping, and he's hearing all this racket. And he wakes up, and there's the mirror, and there's a bunch of people in the room. And they're dressed up like they're... it's kind of old time clothes, like they're going to some kind of function or party. And there's like one central figure, one guy. And this, our caller is like, he's rubbing his eyes. He's looking, he's like, I've got to be imagining things. This is crazy. But this guy walks up to him. And my caller, Michael, says, who are you? And he's like, we came with the mirror. And my caller's like, you know, he's gobsmacked. He doesn't know what to say. And
yeah.
He says, we like to dance. We didn't get to finish our last dance. That's where you come in.
Wow.
And then he went on and on about all these different things. He had an investigator come and all these things that happened with the house after this mirror. And I, you know, it doesn't make sense to me on one level about items being haunted or possessed, because I think about it this way. I have a knife. A pocket knife that was given to me by my grandfather. My grandfather died in 1981. He's been gone a long time. Mm-hmm. And I pick up this pocket knife that I keep in a box, you know, among your like oldest keepsakes, and I feel him. Now, again, that could be, some people say that could be psychological, that could be in my mind, but we've had a number of cases over the years where people have called in and said this object has been haunted, or this object, you know, this belonged to so-and-so and it had these properties. I really do believe that particularly something you carry all the time or something that you sit in all the time, like a favorite easy chair, I think some of your, I don't know, your spiritual stuff rubs off on it. Your soul rubs off on it. And there is that kind of lingering thing. I've talked to John Zaffis on the Paranormal Podcast quite a few times, the Haunted Collector, about that. Mm-hmm. And the idea that, you know, you got to kind of watch what you bring into your house. We had a classic call on Campfire, where a young girl had a picture of a flamenco dancer, like a lamp in the shape of a ceramic lamp that had been made. And she started seeing this figure at night, this actually human flamenco dancer at night. And she looked very sinister. And every night she would come closer to her in the bed, speaking of beds, till she was coming right up in her face. And then her parents said they got rid of the light, but it continued. Little did she know, she was out playing one day or something. She found that they like threw it behind like an old shed or something. And not until they actually physically totally got it off the property did those sightings of this kind of very nasty flamenco dancer, this woman who kept like, you know, kind of, you know, with the gestures and all of that over her bed, stopped appearing. And the thing was, she later found out that that lamp was supposedly made in a prison. You know how in prisons they make different things and sell them or whatever. And that this person had a very kind of, supposedly the person who made it had a very checkered background and did some very nasty things. So I do believe there's something to objects, whether they be furniture or a pocket knife or a ceramic lamp. I think there's something to haunted objects.
Yeah, it's interesting because sometimes I think we'll assume that an object is going to be haunted because it may be hung on someone's wall or something like that, where it's not necessarily touched every day, but it's there and maybe was part of the atmosphere that someone lived in. But sometimes I'm kind of led more down the road of thinking it's more so objects that were touched every day, that were a part of people. Like, I'm almost more apt to guess that the favorite dress that someone has donated to the local Goodwill from their grandmother that she wore as often as she could is going to be a heck of a lot more haunted than that piece of art that is over in the back of the store.
But that reminds me of something. I just want to put something that happened to me that I mentioned to Zaphis that was interesting about something hanging on the wall. So my parents weren't particularly well off, but we had this second house that they ended up retiring to. And hanging on the one bedroom wall was a large diploma with very kind of old school ornate writing, probably from the 20s or 30s. And it freaked me out. It freaked me out so much that this is back in the day when people used to burn garbage. They ended up burning it, which I was very happy about because it freaked me out every time I saw it. And I thought it was something about the weird calligraphy on it or whatever.
Sure.
And John Zaphis was talking about some things on the show, and I mentioned this, and he said, no, it wasn't the weird calligraphy. That object could have very well been haunted or something about that object in that way. And the visceral reaction wasn't a visual reaction. You were picking up on something. I don't know, but I that always kind of stuck with me, you know?
Yeah. Weird. I mean, just to have something and to have something like that still be in the house that, you know, that you go into where you would think this is, you know, this is a piece of someone's life. This is important to them, whether or not even that individual is still alive. If it's dad's, grandpa's, who's ever, you'd think they would have been taken with them. Why would they leave it in the house?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that was one of those things. I think in retrospect, they should have reached out to somebody. Says, does somebody want this?
Sure.
But maybe they left it. And I think he even made that point. Maybe they left it for a reason. Mm-hmm. Maybe they didn't want it.
You have to wonder.
Yeah. And I even looking at it, even thinking about it now, I'm picturing in my mind's eye, I was like 11, 12 years old. So the picture isn't that clear. But even that kind of freaks me out a little bit. I get a little shiver. It's like, and I've seen, and I love old stuff typically. I mean, I'm a big fan, you know, the older, the better. I'm like the kind of nerd to watch Antiques Roadshow. So I love old stuff.
Sure.
But that diploma freaked me out.
When someone has an object that they go and get rid of that they believe had something attached to it, of the example that I'm sure you've probably heard a gazillion times as have I, is we played with the Ouija board. We went and destroyed the Ouija board. The Ouija board is back in the closet the next day. You know, that sort of thing where the object either returns or maybe the object does actually get destroyed and it doesn't make a, you know, resounding return to a closet. Are you ever truly getting rid of the entity or whatever it is that's attached to it by going and crushing that bunk bed or destroying that piece of art or that lamp if there's something attached to it? Or is that releasing that spirit, or is it putting that spirit or whatever it may be into that area wherever the remnants of it reside? Obviously, it's an opinion-based question, but I'm curious as to what your thoughts are.
If it were me, what I would do is if I had something like that, I would not necessarily destroy it in my home. I wouldn't take apart that bunk bed in my house. Mm-hmm. I would try to get rid of it as one whole piece. I mean, again, and we've had this discussion before on the various shows we've been on together recently. I don't consider myself an expert, so anything I say is just my opinion.
Sure.
No better than anybody else's opinion.
Yeah.
But I would think, to me, the idea would be to get it physically out of your house, for example. Then if you had to break it into pieces, do that outside and then get it totally off your premises. That would kind of seem to be a reasonable order of operation. But as we know, there's no science to this stuff. So sometimes that might work and sometimes it might not. Maybe you take that bunk bed out the door and the spirit or whatever that's attached to it says, hey, you can take the bunk bed, but I'm staying here.
Yeah, that's what I wonder about is no matter where it's destroyed or disposed of, does it then just jump onto something else? Is it just like kind of opening its door to go on to something? When you have something that is having some sort of conscious intent to attach to something, I mean, obviously, again, nobody's an expert where it's all just based on opinion. But do you think those, when people do go down that road, do those things just jump to something else? And it's just kind of, you know, it continues on indefinitely.
It is weird because I used to be, not so much now, but I used to be big on thrifting, like going to thrift stores.
Sure.
But now I'm a little more, I'm a little more after doing these. It's changed my attitude on some things. I'm a little more careful about that.
Yeah.
It's something that I'm just like, I like that. I like old stuff. My wife, it's funny because we'll watch Antiques Roadshow. My wife will say, it's a pile of junk. And it'll be, and that'll fetch $8,000 at auction. So she's kind of that. And I'm like, I like old stuff. And I guess because I'm getting old. But anyway, I'm a little more leery of that kind of stuff. It's like, do I want to bring that in my house or not?
Are there any objects that you would absolutely not get into your house that you've seen? Any specific types of things where you're like, no matter how cool this is, I'm not bringing that in?
I wouldn't, I wouldn't do anything with like pentagrams or anything like that, or any kind of witchcraft kind of stuff, nothing like that. Although I have witchcraft books because I interview people on witchcraft, and I'm not saying there's anything wrong with witchcraft.
Sure.
But, you know, there's certain places where I would draw lines, certainly. And I know some people may take offense, but I wouldn't get into things like Satanism or anything like that. We have a Ouija board, but that belonged to my wife when she was a teenager, and it's just sat in the basement for years now. At this point, I would not bring it out and use it. I don't know if I'd throw it in the garbage. It's been sitting there for
sure.
Been sitting there for 20 years. I don't think I would bring, you know, pentagrams, witchcraft kind of stuff. I probably wouldn't do that. But I mean, other than that, those are the main things I wouldn't bring. Like a real skeleton. I don't think I'd want a real skeleton in my house, for example.
My wife and co-host on Real Ghost Stories Online has a thing with mirrors. She will not buy a used mirror from an antique store. We can go to At Home or Home Goods or whatever and buy it brand new, but the old used ones, no matter how ornate and beautiful they are, those are objects she's like, nope. I think, and it's,
you
because,
know what, that makes sense. I gotta tell you why it makes sense. I think there's something going on, because if I'm sure you've talked to people about the psychomantium and scrying and black mirrors and those kind of things. That's where, most people don't know, that's where the show Black Mirror gets its title. The idea that you can look into a black mirror and see spirits and contact the other side and so forth. In fact, I had one of those in the house somewhere, and I think that I passed it along because I get a lot of books and things. And this was early on. I got a book about scrying, and it had one of those in it, and I ended up getting rid of it, which I actually kind of regretted. I thought about trying it, but it's like, it is kind of spooky. But anyway, the mirror story that I told you earlier about the antique mirror, that plays in very well with your wife's concern. Had another one where someone at Christmas time was staying at a family, the whole family got together for Christmas. Sounded very neat, like at a lodge or somewhere. And this kid wakes up and he sees these two men in tuxedos walking down the stairs in a kind of herky-jerky way. I don't know if you've heard that before. Sometimes when you see entities, they walk in like a weird herky-jerky kind of way. Mm-hmm. And in an echoey way, one of them said to the other, "Oh dear, what a mirror image we are." So we've had some real campfire classics on the show who have specifically revolved around mirrors. I am also somewhat leery of used mirrors.
Yeah.
I think I agree with your wife. I think she's a smart woman there.
No, I agree. It's one of those objects where I can pass easily on a mirror. There's been some odd things, and I too love going and looking at antique stores and thrift stuff, because I'm fascinated with older things. But just like you, over the years, I've become more and more hesitant on what I will consider bringing into my home. Two things that I've seen in the last couple of years, and that I'm curious to hear what some of these would be for you. The more disturbing things that I've seen at antique stores, I've seen coffee tables made out of the device which would hold a casket. I don't know what that's technically called, but it's like the roller type thing that you would put a casket on it and roll it. And I've seen several of those in the last handful of years, either just by themselves or somebody made a real kitsch looking coffee table out of it. To me, that's like, I don't know, you know, not that the individual spent much of their life or at all of their life in the casket with this object, but just the fact of the sadness and all of the emotion that was surrounding this object through so many ceremonies, I would think that this is probably an object maybe prone to have something attached with it. The other thing that I'd seen at an antique store, this was in Wisconsin several years ago, and I could not believe it was there. And I don't know that they even knew what it was, but it was behind a glass counter, and they were very small, but they were two slave gravestones. They were unmarked. The names were not on it. But if you knew what it was, you knew what it was. And I very question if they had any idea what it was. But I was shocked to see that in an antique store. And my wife is from the South, and she could recognize it just from her history and knowing what that looks like. She's like, "Oh my God, did you see what that is there?" And I'm like, "No." And I didn't know what it was. I thought they just looked like bricks or something. And she's like, "Those are slave gravestones. Like somebody took them." And I'm like, "Oh my God, I wonder if they know what it is." So those were two of the more bizarre, this shouldn't be an antique store type things. What is it for you? Have you come across anything in the last handful of years as you go about and you go, "Oh my God, I can't believe they're selling this at an antique store"?
I haven't been at that many antique stores so far. I'm amazed by that gravestone idea. So no, I don't have any that come to mind in particular, but it reminded me, and I'm not trying to change the subject here, but changing the subject.
Go ahead, yeah.
Is it reminded me of a funeral home story that we had, and it was very sad. And it was one of those, like, you know, I kind of wonder what was behind that. But anyway, this family, young couple, I guess, lived over a funeral home, their family's funeral home. And they had a small baby, and the baby was, in this one bedroom that had a closet that had a bunch of the funeral home supplies and things in it. And they had a baby monitor, and they would hear all kinds of ruckus and stuff in the night, and they would go, and the baby would be fine. And they'd hear like sounds of a baby crying, and the baby would be fine. And the baby was cantankerous and didn't want to sleep and those kind of things, as I recall the story. So anyway, they were commenting to the grandfather, who was the owner of it. And he said, "Oh no, I'll take care of this." And he goes to the closet and he takes a box out, and it turns out, and this is very sad, that they had the remains of a baby, like ashes or something, I don't know, that someone did not claim. And they were keeping them in the funeral home, and he had put them in the closet. And once they moved that box of ashes, that box of remains, baby was fine. No more weird crying from the baby monitor. Baby was much calmer, slept much better. Wow. I mean, that's a pretty creepy story. But funeral homes to me, I mean, I know for people who work in the funeral industry, and God bless them, because that's such a tough thing to do. I mean, psychologically, seeing loss every day and having to always comfort people, that's going to be a very tough job. So I have great respect for those people. My God, I don't know how, but I know it's used to, I don't know that it is now, but I'm sure it used to be very common that the mortician or someone would live like above the funeral home. That would be their home. I couldn't do that, Tony. I could not do that. Just knowing that there's like dead people. And again, I've heard it often said, you have more to fear from the living than you do the dead. But I couldn't do it, man. I couldn't. Could you do it? I mean, I'm not the kind. If somebody said, okay, we want you to spend this night alone in this apartment over a funeral home, and there's dead bodies and everything, and hey, you might get this cool thing if you stay by yourself in a funeral home overnight. I wouldn't do it.
No.
Would you do it?
No. I'm quite comfortable just in my studio hearing the stories and not being the one out there. That's what I always say. Because I think that's the misconception that I get all the time is you tell somebody what you do, like, oh, so you're out there investigating? No, I'm in my studio and I'm hearing and I'm moderating.
That's exactly my standpoint. People say, well, why don't you hunt ghosts? And I've talked about this on other shows before. To me, it's like a sportscaster, right? You have the sportscasters who play the game, and that's great. But I also think there's a value to someone who never did play the game. Someone who has a little bit of an arm's length, someone who can moderate, kind of being, I don't know what the saying is, you're in it, but you're not of it.
Sure.
And so I think that gives me, in some ways, and I'm sure you feel the same way about what you do, gives us more credibility because we're not wedded to one theory or one technique or those kind of things because that's what we do. Mm-hmm. We're more of arbiters and kind of the straw that stirs the drink.
When you try and explain what you do, it's like, oh, you worship Satan from your bedroom. Like, no, not at all. It's like a morning show that talks about ghosts. But
I got a funny story about that.
Yeah.
I was called to jury duty about, I don't know, 10 years ago. And, well, maybe a dozen years ago. And at that time, I was doing this, but I also worked at a radio station in advertising. So when I was called to serve and they called me to the panel where they screen you and so forth, and they said, well, what are you working? I work in radio advertising. They sat me on the jury. Then about maybe 3-4 years ago, I got called again. Same thing. They brought the panel. Now at this point, I'm full-time because I've been full-time at this since 2012. And he said, what do you do for a living? And I thought to myself, well, just be very honest and see what happens. I said, well, actually, I do podcasts. Specifically, I concentrate on things like the paranormal, UFO, Bigfoot, ghosts. Would you like me to serve? And strangely enough, they excused me. So
I have to try this.
If it works, it works.
I was called up for jury duty right before we moved out of Wichita several years ago. And that was my excuse was, well, I'm not going to be in your town anymore, so I don't think this will work out for you. But if I ever get called,
I didn't lie. I didn't lie.
No, that's a great one.
I just accentuated the subject matter of my podcast. That's all.
So a very Larry David type move almost, like a Curb Your Enthusiasm. Well, Your Honor, I'm not quite sure. That's great. Let me ask you this, because we haven't really touched on this at all. And this is something, obviously, I'm sure you get asked 1,000 times. I do, too. And I totally understand. Maybe you have a lot of stories. Maybe not many. I'm in the not many category. But yourself, having had paranormal experiences, what's in your book of things that have happened to you over your life that stand out?
Oh, I have a few, but I'm not one of those people who have like the ghost who shows up like Ebenezer Scrooge, that kind of thing, full body apparition. but I get more indications. One of my favorite happened to me almost, I think, about 3 years ago. I had been asked to be on a paranormal cruise with the late Rosemary Ellen Guiley and Micah Hanks. And I was privileged to serve. It was a lot of fun. You get to go on a free cruise and you get to meet some great listeners. And it was tremendous.
Sure.
So anyway, unfortunately, I had a little bit of a cold. So we had a day at sea. And in that day at sea, these cruise ships, a lot of times, will have like little conference rooms. And this was the day that we were going to do talks about various paranormal topics and have a discussion. So Rosemary gave her presentation. Micah gave her, and it came up to be my time. And I was feeling my throat was bothering me a little bit. I said, you know what I'm going to do? I think I'm going to go to the cafe over there and get a coffee just to kind of clear the pipes. And he had to walk through the casino to do that. Now, as I was walking through the casino, I saw one of our group, one of our attendees, playing one of these crane games. It's like the claw that goes down and grabs the cash. And
sure.
So forth. Now, that I had a very visceral reaction to, because my uncle, who had passed a few years earlier, was like a second dad to me. I mean, I don't mean this to disparage my father, but I was just as close to him as I was my dad. He lived with us. It was literally like my two dads. so anyway, he had passed. So, you know, this really, he loved to go to like, if he went to a store like a Walmart or a CVS or something and have one of these claw games with the little stuffed toys, he would spend $10 to get a 99-cent toy from China. He just liked to do that for whatever reason. In fact, on my set here, I have a couple of Ghostbusters figures that he won. And that'll be somewhere on the set as long as I'm doing this.
Sure.
But anyway, and again, this is a very weird thing that only would have meaning to me. So I thought about him very specifically, and I thought, oh my God, I wish he were here. He would love this so much because he would get to play with this thing, but not for toys. He'd be playing for cash. Now, of course, he'd lose, but he'd love it. I know he'd love it. I wish he were here. Right then, a woman comes next to this thing, and she cups her hand to her mouth. She's looking around. She says, John, John. And then a man walks up. Guess what the name of my uncle was?
John.
You got it.
Yeah.
Somebody, I told that story one time and somebody said, Steve. but to me now, some people will say, oh, well, that's just a coincidence, Jim. And I would just say that's one hell of a coincidence.
It is.
I mean, that place at the sea, that the guy happened to go play the crane. I happened to think of my uncle. And then a woman walks up next to him. And I think sometimes that's the way the supernatural works. I think that's the way that messages are gotten to us. Where I had another instance, this goes back years. I was about 18 years old. I was in a rural area, West Virginia, where my parents were born. We were visiting some family. And there was this young lady, apparently, who took a shine to me in the town. So I got to meet her, and we were walking along this country road. And there was this huge log truck parked on the one side, sack full of logs. And the kind that when you're going up mountain roads, you don't want to get behind. I think most people have seen those, know what I'm talking about. So anyway, we're walking up, approaching this log truck. And we split up kind of bread and butter. She goes on one side, I go on the other. And as I'm passing it, I'm like, I need to get away from this truck. I just feel like I need to get away from this truck. Something's telling me to get away from this truck. So I speed up my pace. And I get past the truck and we walk maybe 20 feet. And then we're talking, you know, hey, it's like an attractive young lady. I'm getting to talk to her. I'm focusing on that. I've forgotten all about that truck. But we hear a rumble. Turn around, and almost every log on that truck fell off on the side that I was walking.
Oh, gosh.
And if I had not quickened my pace, or we had stood there, stopped there, if I'd been there, I'd been dead.
Yeah.
Period. Dead. Now, it could have been a coincidence. Totally possible. But why was I so fixated on moving faster? Like, I want to get away from this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have never forgotten that. And I think a lot of people, I just talked to a policeman on our show who was, I think he was by the side of a road or something, and a car went by like at 90 miles an hour and was about to hit him. And all of a sudden he felt something grab his belt and pull him back. When he turned around, there was nobody there. There was nobody on that side of the street. So I believe that we get indications or pushed out of the way or whatever it may be. So my situation's more subtle. They're not like these, you know, some people see grandma come to them and speak to them and they're glowing. That doesn't happen to me, but I get these weird happenstances. And I won't bore you guys with more of them, but I've had several throughout my life.
When we have those sort of experiences, and maybe we can close on this, it may be a mix of things. Do you think it's something where there is almost someone or something else looking out for us? That's, for example, like the guy grabbing the belt. Or is it a sense that we have that we are unaware of, or we're not tuned into enough to say, you know, I can read into the future, or I can tell these things, where you sensed, I just need to get in front of this truck, where it was beyond just, this could be go bad, this could be dangerous, but I more than ever feel like I need to do this. Is it an internal thing that is just within us? Or do you think there's something else or someone else at play on the other side that's helping guide these decisions?
Well, I'm going to give you the ultimate cop-out answer. I think it could be both. I think it could be both.
Sure.
I do think that we have abilities that we don't know. Whether it's our subconscious or whatever it is, maybe somewhere I heard the squeaking of chains and it registered with me somehow. That's a possibility. But it was so minute that it was just at a subconscious level. That's a possibility. Or it could have been a late relative saying, hey, Jim, get out of the way. Get out of the way. I would say it could be either one of those. So I think actually both are possible. I do think now the tough question when you say things like this, it's like, well, what about the person who goes to work and gets killed in a horrible car accident? Was somebody not watching out for them that day? Mm-hmm. Was somebody wanting them to die? You know, that's a flip side of this very tough question.
Sure.
I don't know the answer, but I think it could be both.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. Jim, it's been great talking with you on the show here today. I'm so glad that we've connected over the last couple of weeks. It's been far too many years of us just kind of passing in the night, if you will.
Yes, so, indeed.
For our listeners, let everyone know where they can get your podcasts.
Well, my main two shows, free shows that I think your audience will be interested in, are Jim Harold's Campfire. Been doing that since 2009. Those are people who come on with their stories of the supernatural, ghosts, cryptid creatures, UFOs, and my favorite head scratchers. And folks seem to love that show. It's probably my most popular one. And then the Paranormal Podcast, been doing that since 2005. And both of those you can find anywhere you get your podcast, Apple Podcast, Spotify, Stitcher, iHeart, whatever it is. You can find them all those places. You can also go to jimharold.com, JimHarold.com. And then finally, we have a series of 5 campfire books, which are available on Amazon. And you can get those on the Kindle pretty inexpensively, or you can get paperback. So people can check that out too if they like spooky stories. And if they're listening to one of your shows, Tony, I'm assuming that they do. And again, thank you for being very gracious in having me on your show. I think that it's great when we fellow podcasters, even when we're in the same area, that we can collaborate and we can have each other on each other's shows and kind of raise all of our profiles. And because people love spooky and there's plenty of room for everybody, and we all have our own unique take. And it's been a real pleasure. And thank you for your generosity in having me on the show.
Well, thank you for having me on your show as well. Let's definitely make a point of doing this more in the future.
Absolutely.
That wraps up our conversation with Jim Harold. Very fascinating look at his world of podcasting and discussing very mutual experience that we both share as paranormal podcasters. A big thank you to him for joining us on the program today. Until next time for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds, or Skims. Sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom.